Hey, this is your Olympic hero, Kurt Angle, and you're listening to Top Rope Nation. Oh, it's true. It's damn true.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
I finished these fights.
Give me a hell yeah.
Top Rope Nation.
Learn to love it. It's the best thing going today.
Wow. Imagine not loving professional wrestling. Boys, what a night. AEW Dynamite Grand Slam just got off the air. We're here to talk about it. It's Top Rope Nation. A couple of days early. Usually our episodes drop on Friday. We thought we got to do a show after this big Wednesday event. The right call, Kyle Ross. We're ready to talk some professional wrestling. How are you doing tonight?
I am doing outstanding.
How could you not be? After that 2 hours, I mean, geez.
I would say on par or better than the best clashes of all time.
I mean, dude, it's up there. Justin Joint, you just got done dropping a bunch of money on some new AEW merchandise, so I know you're feeling. How are you doing?
That's how good that show was. Like, I need to give this company some of my hard-earned cash.
No doubt about it, man. Arthur Ashe Stadium, what did they say? 21,000-plus in attendance tonight in New York City. I mean, they're taping right now. They're taping Rampage now for 2 hours as we are going to discuss what we saw on Dynamite tonight. We've got a lot of people joining us live. We're streaming on Facebook. We're on Twitch. We are on Twitter, YouTube, of course. And then this will drop in podcast format immediately after we get done. So if you are live with us right now, let us know in the chat what you thought of tonight's AEW Dynamite. Would love to have you involved in the show as we go. But I mean, I was kind of wondering how they would start off this show. You know, like what the match layout would be, knowing that they were going to tape 2 hours of Rampage afterwards. And I mean, to lead off with Bryan Danielson and Kenny Omega, and to follow that with that CM Punk promo, I mean, that was the first 45 minutes of the show. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this one does in the ratings. Raw, I looked this up before, now I can't remember. It was around like a 0.48-ish average, I think, for 18 to 49.
Four nine.
Yeah. So Dynamite has done better than that. They were lower than that last week, but Dynamite's done over 0.5 before. So it'll be interesting to see if this show tops Raw in 18 to 49 and for the third week in a row beats Raw in the demo. I don't know. We could talk predictions for viewership if you guys want to. But I mean, just a ton of hype, at least among the hardcore audience coming in. So you got to figure if anyone went into this show like, oh, maybe I'll check it out and that match leads off. They hooked him right from the start. So I thought it was a great way to start the show. What about you, Kyle?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to view the ratings pattern, I think. Obviously, mm-hmm. We don't know that right now. You know, there was nothing that was going to be able to follow that afterwards. Yeah. I mean, one of the all-time great television matches in the history of this business. That doesn't mean the rest of the show is bad. The rest of the show is good. But yeah, it's a decision. We'll see if it played out. Whether or not, you know, they did over 1.3 million total viewers 2 weeks ago. You would figure they're going to top that number. If I was setting an over-underline for this show, total viewers, I would say 1.4, which they've only hit once, right, yep. For the debut. So
my prediction was 1.4, 0.51, 18 to 49. That's going to be my prediction. But I mean, yeah, just you couldn't have started any better. And we're going to get into the match here in a second. But Justin Joint, I mean, how excited were you when that was the first thing right off the gate, right out of the gate?
I was shocked until you give it some thought, you know, and the fact that it's a non-title match. What, you know, why wouldn't you let the ladies go on last main event? So the title, because the title's on the line there. Mm-hmm. And like you guys are alluding to, it's really going to grab the viewers. If you kick this thing off with Flight of the Valkyries and Bryan Danielson. And I thought our good friend Zach Hadorn had a good tweet saying, you know, opening the show with this eliminates some of the clock watching that you might have otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's one of the two keys why they probably did open with this. You know, if it goes on at 9:30, everyone's kind of assuming then okay, they're going the distance. Here, it puts some doubt in your mind. I think internally, and by internally, I mean within the company, there may have been some trepidation about timing out the show right too, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah,
if they put it on last, then everybody's got to be out of that ring and this match has got to be ready to go at 9:30. There may have been, you know, some trepidation whether or not they could have done that. And you also want to pick the crowd back up for Rampage. Because as you said, Ryan, you're taping two shows tonight. Yeah. So if you put that on last for Dynamite, how's the crowd going to be for your second TV show? I think those were some of the factors in the decision-making. I don't know. I'm sure Tony Khan will be interviewed. I'm sure he'll talk about it. But if I were, to make some educated guesses, that would be what I think went into the thought process with putting this match on first. And I know, guys, just an all-time great moment. That live crowd losing its shit before Danielson and Omega even locked up. You know, I tweeted you guys, I am fucking shaking right now. I was watching that. But hear me out. What if they would have started the show instead with Tony Khan in the ring kicking it to a hologram of Aretha Franklin?
Oh, no.
That's what I think they should have done. Just really rub it in their faces.
Oh, man. And maybe brought Alice Cooper out for good measure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think everything you said. Yeah, go ahead, Justin.
I was recently in Milwaukee.
Yeah, you were.
Well, personally, I would have started with a long, like, Darby Allin promo that leads to a singles match against Cash Wheeler that then leads into a tag team match. I think that makes for good wrestling television.
I think everything you guys said for sure played into it. I think they wanted to hook viewers right from the start because this was a chance. You put Brian and Omega out there. This is a chance to do all-time best rating. You got that atmosphere in New York City. So I think they're thinking about that. But then I also think, as you said, Kyle, they're thinking about, we got 2 hours immediately after this to tape Rampage. And so if you do that, what they did, a 30-minute draw right before you do that, yeah, I don't know if that would be the best slot for that. Plus, you know, it was cool to see Ruby and Britt main event this show too. You know, AEW has had a lot of criticism about their women's division, which I think is getting better and better. I like to see those two out there getting the main event spot for sure.
So let's talk about this match, shall we?
Yes.
Because I really would put it among the tippy top Mount Rushmore of television matches I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was just, it didn't feel like 30.
No.
You know, I was like, okay, cause, you know, I had joked because we were talking all day on the Facebook page, what's the finish going to be? And time limit draw was certainly, I think, on the short list in terms of expectations, in our group at least. And when it went on first, I was like, all right, yep, I bet you they're doing, the irony of, you know, it going on, what I just said is, well, I kind of assumed it was going to the time limit when they put it on first. But, you know, at one point, I did look at my phone to actually respond to a tweet of yours, Ryan. And I was like, oh my God. It's like already 8:30. Like I assumed it was like 8:20 or something like that. That was a quick 30 minutes.
Yeah, that was the first time I looked at my phone. It was like 27 minutes into the broadcast. Well, I looked at it when the match started. I think it started 4 minutes after the top of the hour. Mm-hmm. And so when I looked at my phone, I'm like, my God, they're almost 25 minutes in already. It was crazy how fast it went, Justin. What about you?
The exact same thing. I think it was about 25 minutes into the show when I first looked at the time, and it's like, holy crap, this is flying by. And I just want to give a big shout out to the crowd and that atmosphere in Arthur Ashe Stadium, because that's incredible. You know, and then opening the show, you know, the first thing you see basically is a giant sign that says New York belongs to AEW, which is amazing.
Yeah. But,
you know, I also saw a lot of tweets from people, wrestling people that I respect on Twitter, saying this is one of the hottest, loudest crowds they've ever been a part of.
Yeah. I mean, it came across on TV. The ovation Brian got when he came out was insane. And then right before I guess they rang the bell right away. And then they just kind of took in the atmosphere for a while. And it was just a crazy atmosphere. This is only the fourth time Omega and Brian have ever shared the ring together. They had two Ring of Honor triple threats, one of them involving Tyler Black, Seth Rollins, another one involving Cesaro. They worked one singles match together in PWG way back in 2009, 4,546 days ago. So it's been a long, we've seen it before, but it's been a long, long time, obviously way before either guy hit it big on the national scene. And yeah, they delivered about as good as you could, I thought, in this situation. And, you know, we talked about trying to predict what they're going to do. Is Brian going to win to set up a rematch at Full Gear? You know, they had already, you know, kind of done that with Christian in August. I think the time limit draw, I mean, I got to be honest, I think that's the right decision. You don't see it that often in pro wrestling. You think of, you know, obviously like the Sting match with Flair comes to mind at the first Clash. It can be done right and it can mean a lot. And I think as hot as that crowd was and to not get a clear cut winner, they were a little pissed at first, but as it dragged on and the Elite came out and everything, I think they were accepting of it. And we're going to see the rematch. Obviously, I think this is a great way to set up the rematch to be for the title. And I mean, I don't have any qualms with how they booked this. What about you, Kyle?
No, I think, you know, again, there's always a disappointment, you know, when a match ends in a draw or your favorite doesn't win. But I think the AEW crowd, you know, is all going to take a step back and be like, yeah, this was the right call. Do you do a 60-minute draw the next time they work on pay-per-view?
No one would complain. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to say no, but...
You know what's so crazy about this match, and I'm assuming you guys would agree, as great as it was, it definitely feels like they've got a better one in them, too. That's what's scary. I mean, this was like a near-perfect match, and there's no doubt in my mind, you give them more time, they're going to be even better. You know, this was Brian's first match in forever. And, you know, I liked the story of the match, at least early on, was, all right, here's a guy, first match in a while, new promotion, and he's kind of a step slower than the champion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it should be. The snap dragon suplex on the outside was absolutely tremendous. And I thought Seth the Tone, you know, Brian, you know, with his, you know, the neck that always gets sympathy when people, oh, that's funny. Okay. I was like,
I saw the comment first.
That distracted me. And I saw the first line. I saw somebody send the show. I absolutely hated the show tonight. I was trying to study those plans, with shit, but I only read the first sentence. I'm like, who the
Sorry
fuck is this thing? They hated
thought, but
the
I like,
show.
I like the comment, Bianca. That's
you
great.
Know how easy it is to mess with my train of thought, Ryan. I'm like a cat.
I'm sorry. Bianca checking in the chat saying one. I hated the show. I was trying to study. Yeah. Those plans went to shit. That's awesome.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you know, the Snapdragon suplex set the tone, and Brian, as the match kept going on and on, you know, he was getting better and better. It was just perfect. It was absolutely perfect for a guy first match in the promotion against the world champion. I don't think he could have done it any better.
Yeah, he gave us the cattle mutilation, which was an amazing spot. Mm-hmm. Definitely popped the crowd.
Yeah, and this was a smart crowd, too, that knew it, the spot right away.
Yeah, I loved it. I think it was right after the dragon suplex on the ramp where Kenny went running down the ramp with the huge V trigger and followed that up with the buckle bomb that sent Brian over the top, which embarrassingly made me gasp.
But that's the thing though, when you've got that injury history and you're careful enough and play into it, it works.
Yeah. Yeah. Justin, you always kind of notice the subtle things on the wrestling show. So I wanted to throw this to you. Cause one of the things that stood out to me was that even though, as Kyle mentioned, like he was kind of a step behind Omega, like stylistically, it was a totally different Bryan Danielson than you saw in WWE. I mean, that really came across. And you're like, okay, the American Dragon is back. I thought that definitely he was working even on offense, like at a quicker pace than you've seen him work in WWE in many years. And it initially, like when I'm watching that, it stood out to me, like you can see that WWE style and how that affected his work, because this guy, you know, he's been in that company for a decade and like, dude, he can still work hard. You know, he could work fast like he did way before he ever signed with WWE. It was like, I don't know. I noticed he's like a little more aggressive, a little cockier as he worked. And that stood out to me. Did you notice a difference from his WWE work, Justin?
Yeah. I mean, like you said, it was a much faster style. If this had been a WWE match, you know, the first 10 minutes would have just been you know, rest holds and, you know, really slow moving. And it really would have felt like a 30-minute match. But no, this was almost, you know, strong style Bryan Danielson. Kyle?
Yeah. And,
you know, though, on that point, what's interesting is I think he actually worked both quicker and took his time more. Like at the beginning, they were definitely taking their time and everything mattered. It wasn't taking their time where things were boring. It was everything that happened mattered. It was kind of like Flair Steamboat-esque, where the little things were big deals.
I agree.
You're right, but you're at the point is well taken, right? He very much, and there's going to be people who get very upset that we're saying this, but I don't give a damn. Okay. He was very much cleansing himself over the course of that half hour of the WWE style. You know, the WWE, it's so trope-filled and obvious what's going to come next, you know? This was Bryan Danielson going back to, like you said, the pre-WWE.
Yeah.
So kind of coming off of that point, you know, speaking of the WWE style and whatnot, we've already said this is one of the best television matches we've ever seen. Is this better than any of his WWE matches?
I love that question so much. So what's his best WWE match the Cena match at SummerSlam?
Yeah,
off the top of my head, that's in terms of singles matches, that would be number one.
The Sheamus match was pretty good.
Yeah, the Hunter match at WrestleMania is very good. That and one. You know me, I mean, I'm never one to hesitate to take a pot shot at Paul Levesque. Get well soon, by the way. But, you know, those are like kind of like his my two favorite singles matches, I think, off the top of my head.
Yeah.
And this was like on par, if not better than both those. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kyle, you mentioned the Facebook group. And by the way, if you guys are not in our Facebook wrestling discussion group, join up. There's a link here on YouTube in the description and then in the podcast description as well. You mentioned that this match was kind of an homage to both Flair Steamboat and Savage Steamboat, I believe you said. Do you want to explain your comment?
Well, yeah, they did the backdrop spot. They nothing warms my heart more than the heel making the just like blind charge at the baby face on the ropes and the baby face backdrops him over. I did like that spot will always, always, always make me think of WrestleMania 3.
Yeah.
So I thought that was nice how they put that in, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just thought, you know, with the trading of the chops earlier and just two guys taking their time and a feeling out process early on, it felt like, you know, the Flair Steamboat matches a little bit where it was, you know, it was two guys trying to make it an athletic contest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. So, I mean, I thought just Brian, you know, knowing his history with the neck issues and the head issues and everything, for him to take the dragon suplex on the ramp to take it off the top, I mean, Jesus Christ. Yeah. Insane.
And, you know, and you mentioned that, and this kind of jogged my, you know, a thought. Because Jim Ross had a good reaction to that spot. And I thought Jim Ross did a great job calling this match. You know, I know Jim sometimes, you know, can run hot or cold on these telecasts. And Twitter will definitely tell you which he is. But I thought he was pretty good during that match. You can tell when he's really into something with this product. And when he's maybe not so much. He was very much into this. And going back to that reaction at the beginning, this felt like just, you know, one of the biggest matches in the industry in recent memory. And it's so funny that it felt that way coming on the heels of Brian, what he said in an interview. I don't know if it was today or yesterday when he's
about
like,
apples being come from trees.
No, he did definitely say that, though, and I can't believe he said that. But he also, and this is not as humorous as that, but he said that this match with Omega is the biggest match of his career, bigger than him main eventing WrestleMania. And this felt had like the vibe of like a WrestleMania, like the big WrestleMania main events.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
100%.
Guy who said, it's a guy who made a better WrestleMania 6 months ago or whatever, 5 months ago, said he felt nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
I bet he felt something tonight, that's for sure.
Yes. Absolutely.
So do you guys think we're going to get the rematch at Full Gear? You think they'll drag it out longer than that or do it earlier?
It wouldn't surprise me at all if they do it sooner. Although, I mean, having already had that one on TV.
Yeah.
You kind of have to.
You got to make money off of it, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, but also Tony Khan isn't the kind of guy who waits, you know, to put a match on. You know, we're getting Miro and Sammy Guevara this Wednesday. I thought that's something they might have held off on.
For that's a great point by you. Every time I'm like, okay, I'm going to pencil this in for Full Gear. They're like, nope, we're going to put that on TV. they do the whole time. So they always keep you guessing at last minute about the pay-per-view cards. I do think you would have to do a rematch on pay-per-view. Because if you went like, I don't know. I mean, if you did want to go longer, it's tough on TV. I mean, I guess you have 3 hours of TV per week, so it can be done. Mm-hmm. But, you know, doing two TV matches, then pay-per-view, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, and they can certainly play off of Kenny Omega's tweet afterwards where he said, no, there's going to be no rematch.
the Rocky thing. Line. Yeah.
Yeah.
A great thing for a heel champion to say, too.
Yeah. Daniel Ortiz checking in the chat, patron of the show. Danny, thank you for your support. He says, were you guys a little disappointed that Hangman didn't come out to save Danielson? What do you think, guys?
I hadn't even thought about him. I mean, I think it's okay saving that moment just for it being about Omega and Daniel Bryan.
Agree.
You know, let Christian and Jungle Boy run out and make the save and save Hangman Page for another day.
Yeah, I mean, I had thought that it was maybe a possibility just because, okay, they're doing this match now with Omega and Danielson. Maybe they're going to kind of detour a rematch, right? Where Adam Cole could cost Danielson the match, not necessarily make him lose, but just, you know, interfere. And you could do Danielson, Cole, and Paige, Omega. But I'm fine with it. It's just you have to pick a direction. And they picked, obviously, to continue this Omega Danielson issue, and I'm fine with that. This was a win-win, which is what you want as a booker, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know what Paige's personal situation is right now, if that was even considered.
Yeah. Guys, before we go any further, I just want to mention, if you are listening and if you're live with us right now on YouTube, Facebook, wherever you are watching, do know that we drop our shows on podcast feeds wherever podcasts are available. We're on Apple, Podbean, Spotify, Stitcher. Please subscribe on all those feeds. It helps us out a lot. Leave us a 5-star rating. And I mentioned Patreon a second ago. Danny was checking in our chat. He's a prep patron of the show. We had two people join the Patreon this page. So a special shout out to Peter and Chris. Appreciate your support. That got us over 25 patrons. We're now at 26 patrons. And I had something special promised when we hit 25. Yes, indeed. I published it tonight. The unreleased cut of Top Rope Nation Extra, the Kyle Ross solo pod that he was so pissed about. I got to tell you guys, he was so angry that night that I jumped on the next day and we re-recorded it. He didn't want it released. But then I hung the carrot out there. I said, all right, guys, I will release it if we get to 25 patrons. And yes, we did. It is available right now on Patreon. Check it out. Patreon.com/Top Rope Nation.
Not to, you know, shoot the carrot or whatever. It's probably a total letdown. Like, it's nowhere near as bad as I made
it. It's not as bad as you said it was. I listened to it already.
I was just irate because, I don't know. I didn't have good notes.
You were distracted.
Yeah.
But I do want to say with Patreon quick, we'll get back to Dynamite in a second, so bear with me here. But we recorded an awesome podcast this past weekend. Here's a screenshot of it. This is the video feed as we recorded. It has not been released yet, but if you're looking right now, that is the great stoned. Liam O'Rourke. The great Liam Liam O'Rourke, award-winning author, 2017 Wrestling Observer Newsletter, Book of the Year on Brian Pillman. He's a patron of the show, longtime supporter of Top Rope Nation. He jumped on with us for this month's Top Rope Nation Classics. It's a monthly bonus show we do exclusively on Patreon, and we looked back at WWF One Night Only 1997. We had Liam on the show because he was at the event. It was a ton of fun. I will be dropping that in the next couple of days. In fact, I've already started mixing it. I've been pulling the bonus audio and all of that. So that's going to be coming out on the Patreon page probably before this weekend, and you'll be able to hear the full thing. It's over 2 hours in length. One of our best editions of classics we have ever done.
Could have been three.
Definitely could have been three. We recorded it this
Ryan
past
would have had
Saturday
a
morning.
Divorce, though.
Yeah.
I had to help my wife with the kids.
My kids were getting crazy as we recorded. So I'm like, all right, guys, we got to go. But no, two plus hours. Great show. Dropping on Patreon very soon. There will be a teaser hitting, I think, next Friday. Our regular podcast feed, you'll be able to hear the first 15 minutes. But the only way to hear the full show, become a patron. There's, I think, 22 editions of Top Rope Nation Classics now in the archive, plus another 27 editions of Top Rope Nation Extra, which is a weekly bonus show we do only for Patreon. In fact, we're going to be doing one this Friday night. It might just be me. I don't know if the guys can jump on. We haven't even talked about it. I will for sure be doing it on Spotify Green Room Friday night, a bonus show every single week. The only way to hear that is on Patreon. The link is here in the video and the podcast description. So check that out and see how you can support the show. It's the best way to support us. Let's see. I'm checking the chat now. The CM Punk promo. I mean, what a way to follow the opening, the 30-minute time limit draw. CM Punk comes out, of course, gets a great reaction from the crowd. He's wearing the banned Air Jordan 1s, the red and black version that Jordan wore with the Bulls back in 85. Awesome. Don't think I've ever seen CM Punk wearing Jordans before, but hey, man, as a Chicago guy, it makes a lot of sense. And he talked about, of course, you know, Taz guys attacking him last week. And we talked about this on the pod last week, how we might see, you know, the more aggressive CM Punk for the first time in this promo. He's been pretty much the whole time he's been back, it's been happy-go-lucky CM Punk. And he played into that in this promo tonight. He talked about how these guys are trying to take that away from him. How every time he comes out, he's overjoyed to hear Cult of Personality. He's overjoyed to hear that crowd response. And Taz's guys, Hobbs, they're trying to take it away. And he said, you are going to get that more aggressive side of him eventually. And he kind of played into that a little bit tonight, but not quite yet. Justin Joint, what did you like? What did you think about CM Punk's promo tonight?
A little distracted from an angry kid during it, but what I did catch, you know, weeks ago, I think I even called out that he had pretty major like CM dad energy vibes about him. And you know, that's what he addressed, but it's also like, he's just happy to be back and there's nothing wrong with that. And he'll get around to being the angry, you know, snarky CM Punk at some point, but yeah, as of right now, you know, he's just having a good time.
What about you, Kyle?
Thought it was a great promo. Cue Wade Keller with the meta references, I'm sure, on his podcast. He'll be saying meta to recap that. But yeah, I thought it was great how he played off kind of what fans are wanting from him and, you know, weaving it into the storyline.
Mm-hmm.
Punk's been great on social media too all week.
Yeah.
The 93,173 tweet that he had. I think after he beats Hobbs on Rampage, he should spend the next 20 years talking about how, you know, he broke every, you know, tendon in his back, slamming Hobbs, the 500 pound Hobbs.
Yeah.
Who then died shortly after. And he didn't know Hobbs was going to go up until that moment.
I want to shout out too. I just listened to this today. Punk, you know, he's been great just listening to him do these interviews lately and being happy to be back around wrestling and to come back with AEW. He did a great podcast interview. It's a Drop in Character podcast with Robbie Ramos, who is one of the stars of Heels that Punk was on a couple episodes ago. Well worth checking out. Check out the Drop in Character podcast. I really enjoyed that listening to over the last couple of days. But Justin, go ahead.
I was just going to shout out the one thing I definitely did catch that I enjoyed was him saying at the very beginning, it's like, how is anybody supposed to follow that match?
Oh, man. No kidding. That's for sure.
It kind of got a weird reaction from the crowd. I think the crowd just wanted to actually cheer him, which was ironic because he's like, no one can follow that match. But the crowd's like, yes, you can.
I thought it was perfect placement because you follow that and then they throw up the graphic on the screen. Up next, CM Punk. Like, all right, we're going to keep this train rolling.
Look, I mean, they had to fight, you know, him being the only quote unquote non-wrestling segment of the show. You had to put it in the right place. And that was the right place. No, there would have been no other segment that on this show that wouldn't have died a little bit. Or I don't know if died, that might be too strong a term, but it would have been tough getting them, you know, going after that match. But Punk was perfectly placed with that promo.
Yeah. And then this was the first time during the show, for me at least, where it was a little bit, it settled down a little bit. We got MJF and Brian Pillman Jr. I thought that, just going back to that event they had in Cincinnati, they've built up this match well. Brian's definitely not ready for a singles run yet, though. This was his, and we talked about this on the pod before, this was his chance to kind of come out there and prove that he could succeed as a single. I think what he's doing with the Blondes right now in the tag team is great. He should be there for a while, though, still. I mean, this match was, it was okay, but Brian is, he's a little slow in the ring. I think that showed for me tonight. MJF, you know, it was one of those things where he's got to beat him and then move on to something else. What did you guys think of this match?
You can almost, sorry.
So you go ahead, Justin.
You can almost hear Pillman, like, thinking about the match when he's doing moves. Like he's really raw. And it definitely seems like he's just doing moves instead of competing in a wrestling match. Mm-hmm. I did like the beginning, you know, with the way MJF has been talking about his family, you know, MJF offering the handshake and Pillman just taking him down and doing punches. But I totally agree with you. I think he needs to stay in the tag team division for now, unless they change his name to Brian Breaker, in which case, you know, maybe he could get a big push.
That's what you got to do with these second generation guys.
Yeah. I wonder if this feud would have even been necessary had MJF not lost to Jericho at the pay-per-view. Right? Because MJF is obviously a guy who you're keeping at the top of the card. Lose the paper. So you've got to do something to kind of, you know, reinvigorate him. I don't know if that's the right term, but I'll use it anyway, as a top heel. Yeah. And, you know, normally I'm a guy who advocates for baby faces getting revenge, but I agree with you guys. Pillman Jr. is just not on MJF's level. And I don't think anyone's going to make the argument that, you know, he deserves a big singles push, you know, above what he's getting right now. I think the Varsity Blondes is a good spot. I think one of the strengths of AEW is most people are at their correct spot on the card. And, you know, I think this was a way to test the waters. What can he do as a single? If you'd want to break the Blondes up moving forward, you can do that. I mean, I don't know what you can do. You know, maybe one of them starts dating Julia. I don't know. How old are they? Pillman and Griff. You have to be careful because she's only 18. And you don't want Twitter.com to get after you. But
poor Brian Jr., he's not 30 yet. He's getting close, though, I think.
Okay. Well, I don't know. Maybe you could do something. But I agree with you. I think, you know, as a tag team right now, they're fine. An underneath babyface tag team. That's a good role. I just don't think he looked good in any of the segments in this feud. Even like last week when he didn't hit MJF with a chair, that was like really awkward. And then there was something 2 weeks ago too, like, I don't know, him and Griff just kind of came across as, I don't know, is losers too harsh? But like, you know, like they kind of like just like were, you know, handed their lunch by the heel, and that's no good. It just, MJF is just simply more important in this promotion than Brian Pillman Jr. And not only deserved to win this, but deserved a clean win, which he got. I thought the match was a little too long, too.
He's 28 years old, Pillman Jr.
Okay.
Looked it up.
Yeah, you can get away with that in a year or something if you want. I mean, the whole varsity thing, I mean, they're wearing letterman jackets, cheerleaders. Yeah. I mean, it seems like if you want to break them up, it seems like that'd be a way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying they should break them up anytime
soon. Yeah, not yet. Yeah. Okay, let's go to Cody and Malachi Black. So now the build to this obviously was great. I thought, you know, the black mask to Cody and when he left for several weeks was awesome. They replayed that in the video package. I mean, he really took that on the chin. You know, his return in the brawl was good recently. And then here in New York City, Cody definitely playing into the Homelander comparisons with the boys when he came out with this new ring gear. I mean, it was just like out of that show on Amazon. And yeah, some people were kind of shocked by the response. I wasn't. I mean, if you've been watching wrestling a long time, you know the New York crowds are traditionally very, very hard on white meat baby faces, so to speak. And Cody got a mostly negative response from the crowd. I mean, they were definitely behind Malakai. And knowing the New York audience, that was pretty predictable going in, don't you think, Kyle?
Well, yeah. I mean, Malakai Black's been getting superstar reactions every week on television.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's not going to happen for everyone who jumps from WWE here to AEW. But man, I mean, he's got to be feeling good about his decision making right now, about where he's at. I mean, the crowd has taken him like a star. As for Cody and the reaction, I think, you know, having Brandy out there maybe, you know, didn't help.
It was nice to see her, though.
It was. I mean, hey, you know, giving birth is the toughest job in the world, and my hat's off to you. But nothing got me booing more than her trying to leech off the Malakai Black sit in the ring thing, and she did it and like flipped them off, and she thought she was so cool, and she
dude,
was
I liked
cool.
That. You didn't like that? I liked no, that. I liked it. I thought it was humorous.
If it was anyone else besides Brandy, I think I would have liked it. So I just thought with her, she was just trying too hard, and you just knew it was going to have the reverse reaction that it was intended. I think people like in their heads, they're like, "Ooh, look at her! What a badass!" And everyone's like, "No, you're not cool. We still want to see Malakai
right
Black."
She said "F you," which was pretty funny.
Yeah, we still want to see Malakai Black kick your husband's ass.
So as Danny,
thank God he won. I was nervous during this. I was like, God, they cannot put Cody over here.
Danny in the chat, Arn versus the Ring Apron might be feud of the year. So
damn it, Arn.
What they did at the finish. So before they did this, Arn like fell off the apron apparently. And yeah. Then he got back up there. Everyone was confused. I was wondering like, is there something up with him medically? Like what just happened? Everyone's kind of looking off to the side. He gets back up there. Runs into Cody. They play up this dissension between Cody and him. He shoves Cody. Basically, he was telling him to get back in the ring, but there was like, ooh, what's going on here? Are they splitting up? And eventually, he gets into the ring and takes a shot to the face. Hits Black, had the Black mist to Cody's face, covers him, gets the victory. So once again, Malakai Black over Cody Rhodes. Nobody can fault Cody for putting people over. We've talked about this before too. Like the dude has done everything the last couple of years to put over other guys and do it the right way, despite being one of the top decision makers in the company.
Yeah. I think repeating the Brody Lee feud where, you know, he took the time off, came back and won. And I love that dog collar match for the record that they had, but I think repeating that scenario would have been a grave error here. They've got, you know, a lot of mileage with this Black. Like I said, he's getting superstar reactions every week. Part of me would have absolutely loved to see Arn slide into the ring and DDT Cody for the heel turn. Although that crowd would have lost its shit if he would have done that, man. Arn is looking, you know, God, look, I think we've all put on a few pounds in the last couple of years, but man, Arn's looking round. He is looking round.
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, it was fine, though, for what it was. I mean, the crowd was really into this. And, I mean, the dynamics of Malakai getting cheered, Cody getting booed made it interesting to me, at least. Well, so I thought it was good.
That's kind of my big question coming out of it is, you know, as you alluded to, Ryan, you know, you had to have kind of known or at least not been surprised that Cody was going to get booed. I've certainly been in favor of booing him for a few months now. But with that ending with, you know, the kind of the back and forth miscommunication between him and Arn, and then in the corner where Cody was seemingly getting very frustrated with maybe that situation and, you know, just dealing with the heel where he pushed or kind of elbowed the ref away, which I thought it was going to be, it looked like a DQ to me. Obviously it was a heel finish with the mist, but I don't know. Some of that kind of felt like them knowing that the destination is Cody to be a heel.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. I mean, was it unique to New York? I mean, it's not like he's not gotten a negative reaction in this promotion before. I think they're going to, I don't know if they've gone 100% that he's going to be heel. I don't know if they should be 100% right now. I think they should kind of play it by ear. If he's getting booed every week, then it's obvious. Who knows? Way too early for him to get revenge on Malakai Black. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
I will say, Cody did a very good job playing off the boos. It was very The Rock when Roman Reigns won the Royal Rumble. Mm-hmm. Kind of taking a look around. It's like, you know, he's noticing.
I think The Rock was like, seriously, you fucking flew me in for this? Flew me in to stand next to this asshole you knew was going to get booed? Who booked this shit? I did like, and I'll give credit where credit's due, Chad Campbell tweeted at the start of the match, is Arn on the hot seat because of his game plan the last match? Because they were like arguing right from the start.
He also had another one of my favorites right after the Omega Danielson match. He said, 2 3/4.
So they announced Miro and Sammy Guevara for next Wednesday night TNT title match. That'll be a big one.
That'll be a great dynamic.
That promo where he's talking about his God and his wife and his God, he demands pain and she demands pleasure. Sometimes pain too. I that cracked me up. That was really good. He deadpanned that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bianca checking in. Cody has said he would retire before turning heel in AEW. Yes, he has. He has said that, but I don't know about that.
I think he can.
Promises are broken.
He can just play. I mean, unless if it's just like where the crowd is just shitting on him every week.
Yeah.
I think he's going to fight his way through it.
He doesn't have to full on turn. Yeah.
I mean, did you see his father in 1988 Crockett? For God's sake.
Yeah.
Talk about fighting through it.
That is such a weird thing to dig your heels in about. Like, why wouldn't you want to turn heel?
Yeah. So much more fun to be a heel.
WWE truly wasn't the place for him.
Huh? All it is heels. Yeah. Heels on top, at least.
Another guy like Malakai Black, just, you know, not regretting their decision making. Mm-hmm. Going from the morass of the WWE mid-card to greener pastures in AEW.
If Miro is God's favorite champion, does that mean Malakai is the devil's favorite son, Danny?
I don't know. Please.
Yes, indeed.
Send that to Tommy N. That sounds like one of his promos.
It does.
By the way, the promo he cut on Road 2, the special, I don't know if you guys watched the YouTube special preview in tonight's show. His promo was one of his best ever. I thought Kenny Omega's promo was one of his best ever as well.
Nice.
Throw that out there.
How about FTR with Tully Blanchard taking on Sting and Darby Allin? Sting at 62 years old, looking great out there, guys. I thought, this guy looked great in the ring. And I think someone in our Facebook group said it. Might have been Michael. Can't remember. Talking about how, like, look how WWE kind of wasted this guy when they brought him back.
Horrible 2015 run that was.
6 years ago. We're 6 years later, and this guy's still delivering. He looked great in the ring. I think, you know, the way they laid out the match was perfect to his strengths. Mm-hmm. And, the crowd obviously overjoyed to see him in this setting, in this massive, massive crowd. I mean, he hasn't worked a show in front of this many people since WrestleMania 31. And he was great. I mean, it seemed like on social media to me, the match was good. I liked that FTR wore like the NWO inspired tights. That was a cool callback to Sting's old feud.
Okay. I was also wondering if that was maybe a nod to Big E in the New Day, because New Day had been wearing the Wolfpack.
I'd seen NWO some people talk about that. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that was a nice touch too. And you know, it was a pretty good match. I thought the coffin drop that Darby hit at the finish on the ring apron was crazy looking. Yeah. But I mean, overall, it seemed like, at least on my social media feed, everyone was talking about like how impressive Sting looked in this match. And hey man, testament to a guy at 62 years old, he can go out there and deliver still.
Yeah, and you know what else? We talked earlier about guys being in the right spot on the card. And Sting is like in the perfect role for him. And you know, AEW is a strong promotion and has strong people on top, because you're not hearing like these inane takes like, I think Sting deserves another run with the title. I mean, because that'd be stupid. Right? But like, he's perfect where he's at. Tag teaming with the young guy, you know, hanging around with the young guy. He can come into his spots in a tag match. FTR, I have not had a chance to check it out, unfortunately. been running around, been kind of busy this week, but I heard their match on Dark this week was among the best in Dark history. So I've got to check that out too. They're doing good work, apparently, not just on this show, but all week long. And yeah, I thought it was the second best match on the show.
I think Sting's really missing out on having left WWE. He could be a four-time 24/7 champion by now at this point in his career.
Remember when he shows up at Survivor Series to confront the Authority? Big reaction,
yeah.
Huge baby face, people loving it. And then by WrestleMania, WWE turned it into this like shitty extension of the Monday Night Wars, and he just loses because he was the WCW guy. Who did he lose to, by the way?
Trips had to get that
you
win.
You guessed it.
Had to get that win. You know what? One of the other things that stood out to me watching this is because I've heard some people, uninformed people mostly, say stuff like, oh, AEW, it's just like WCW. They're taking all these old guys. And well, first of all, in WCW, those guys actually weren't that old. But like the difference between AEW and WCW is that in WCW, they brought in the WWF guys, and they never made anyone really that was younger. You know, like they were positioned as the top guys, and they pretty much stayed the top guys until the company went out of business. But you look at AEW, where they signed these people that have, you know, been in other promotions, WCW way back in the day, like Sting, WWE, but they're coming in and they're using them the right way to elevate young talent. You know, you look at CM Punk, and who's he work with in his first match? Darby Allin. Yeah, they're using an old guy like Tully Blanchard, but they're putting him with FTR. You bring in Sting, but he's working alongside Darby Allin, you know, one of the hottest faces in the promotion, but to elevate him a little bit more. So I think there's this disconnect between some people who are like, oh yeah, it's just like WCW bringing in the WWF cast off guys, but it's not, because they're doing it the right way where they're elevating the next generation so that this company can go on and on, hopefully. Right. So,
I mean, I'll take it a step further. I think people who don't see the beauty in performers moving promotions are just stupid and don't understand professional wrestling, quite frankly.
That's how it's always worked. Yeah.
That's how it's always worked. Yeah. You know, we'll talk about this on Sunday. I know our next show is Extreme Rules. But, or at least the next time, I think I'm going to be with you guys.
Yeah.
But, you know, It seems like WWE is kind of doing a cleansing of its mid-card right now, and that's okay, because it's stale. We've been talking about it for years. They have a stale mid-card. We just want guys to move. It's not stealing guys from WWE. It's people just having nothing left to do in WWE and wanting to work for a new promotion. That's the way
moving to a new territory
has been. Yes.
Yeah.
People who are significantly younger than us, 10 to 15 years, I'll guess, who just have kind of grown up with one national U.S. promotion. Freedom of movement is where it's at. It always used to be that way. Staying in the same place for 6, 7, 8 years is very unique.
Yep.
To like the modern WWE. It just never happened at any other time, and it shouldn't ever happen. It's boring.
Yeah.
I mean,
these guys turn babyface and heel 3 times. Switch shows. He's on Team Blue now. Oh, that fucking's awesome.
Dolph Ziggler is in his 40th year with WWE.
I believe that is correct.
So make sure to tune into our Extreme Rules post show this Sunday night.
Hey, you know, I think
it should be a good time.
I think people like at least when we make fun of it.
So. Well, it'll be a fun show. It always is. But yeah, we will be streaming live on YouTube Sunday night immediately after Extreme Rules. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, Friday night, we'll be doing our bonus show for Patreon, Top Rope Nation Extra. That will be on Spotify Green Room. You can listen live. That one you can't watch. But if you get the Spotify Green Room app, search Ryan Drosty, follow me. I will invite you to the live room when we record. But the podcast version, available exclusively Friday night on Patreon. So check that out. They announced the full card for the 2-hour edition of Rampage this Friday night, which, again, I'll be going live after the fact to talk about. And here is the lineup. We've got Anna Jay taking on Penelope Ford. We've got the Lucha Bros taking on, or the Lucha Bros and Santana and Ortiz taking on Private Party and the Butcher and the Blade. CM Punk versus Powerhouse Hobbs. Jericho and Jake Hager versus Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky. Adam Cole and the Young Bucks taking on Christian Cage and Jurassic Express. And in the main event, Moxley and Kingston taking on Lance Archer and Minoru Suzuki. That is Suzuki Goon for those of you keeping score at home. So a hell of a card.
That is,
for
that
Friday
is a
night.
Sweet show, man.
Jesus. Six great matches. They're taping it right now as we are live on the air.
Dan Lambert's got to come out with a tennis racket, right? In Arthur Ashe Stadium, just to do the full on troll of Cornette. Yes. Like he's got to come out and like just so Jericho can come out and say, what kind of asshole would have a tennis racket in the wrestling ring? Right? I mean, that's like a given. Come on. Make the layup, AEW.
Before we get to this main event, we had a question in the chat. Who do you think will be the first AEW wrestler to jump to WWE? Right now,
God willing, like Brian Cage.
Brian Cage, probably, right? Yeah, that's what I was going
to
say,
he's,
too.
You know, I mean, it seems like he's the first one to have some consternation with the booking.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, though, because I think what brought the unique stuff that Brian Cage brings, because he's a big guy, he's got that WWE body, but he does work in indie style, right? Yeah. And they're going to flush that right out of him. They don't want him to work like that if he's a big guy. So I don't know if that would be – they might look at that and be like, yeah, that's not a great get. He's older. So I don't know. I don't know who it'll be, to be honest with you. Why would you want to go to WWE?
I mean, if I'm a young wrestler, I can't imagine wanting to go there. If you're an older wrestler, you want a big payday, you know, the big stage, it makes sense. But, you know, yeah, if you're in your early 30s and younger, I can't really imagine wanting to go there. I mean, and all of the reports have said the same, that it's not really the destination among that generation right now. I mean, there's a viable alternative that is much more exciting right now, and you can still make good money. You can work a light schedule. It wouldn't make sense for me to go that direction, but yeah.
I agree with Daniel Ortiz in the chat, this thing that just came up. Moving him off Team Taz was a death knell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as a single baby face, hasn't worked. I thought he was great in Team Taz. I thought just him standing there, you know, opposite side of the screen is Hobbs, Ricky Starks is smiling, Hook is looking like his usual cool self, and Taz cutting promos. That was a great presentation. I think breaking Cage off on his own has hurt him more than helped. Usually that's not the case for guys.
Yeah. Baker and Soho, main event.
Destination unknown.
This was an interesting dynamic because Baker, I guess, technically is a heel, but, you know, they've kind of taken it on that she's the cool heel that's going to get cheered still, even though, like, she cheats to win, which she did here. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, Ruby Soho got a great pop from the live crowd. How can you not with that entrance theme, the Rancid theme song? It was great. Yeah, I thought they had a nice match. And, you know, in the end, I just found the crowd dynamic very interesting during this one. And Kyle, you put it out there in our Facebook group. Are we going to see a title change? And
well, because it was going on last, right? Yep. I'm like, mm-hmm. Well, are they going to do something big? But what they did was the right call. You know, there is that old TNA Impact perception, you know, they would get someone from WWE and they just put them right over at the top and it would make their existing homegrown talent look bad. You didn't want to beat Ruby Soho like clean as a sheet out of the gate. But I think, you know, she's someone who remember, you know, we're not casting aspersions. She was fired. It's not like she was like Bryan Danielson who chose to leave. And I think, perception wise, you don't want to just rush the title onto someone like that, especially beating someone like Britt Baker, who's one of your top homegrown stars. So
yeah,
Britt retaining via cheating was the right call. You could do a rematch at the pay-per-view if you want. Obviously she's been wronged and do that.
Yeah, I
totally agree with you guys. The right person won. It felt a little anticlimactic. They protected Ruby a little bit, you know, with the, it's a numbers game. I guess the only thing I wish they'd maybe had is a little bit more time to put on a little bit more of a banger of a match, maybe take some of the time away from MJF and Pillman and, you know, give it to the ladies, but other than that, it felt like the right outcome.
Yeah. Look at Ruby Soho. You know, she's someone who we always thought, we talked about her on the podcast, you know, back when she was with WWE, as someone who was unique, always got a great crowd response. They never did anything with her. I mean, even the Riot Squad was always like very over, and they never did anything with her. And so then they release her, and then she's sitting at home for several months. She comes out at All Out, gets that massive reaction. Then here she is headlining this biggest show in the history of AEW, like attendance wise. What, I mean, talk about, she said it on the show that getting released by WWE was, or she said on the bill, like on Rampage last week, that this was the best thing that ever happened to her. No doubt about it. I mean, what a turnaround.
Yeah. And the frustrating thing about her in WWE, when you look back, is if you're a smart person and you understand the way WWE works, you knew they weren't going to do anything with her. Right. I think like when the Riot Squad first got called off, I said, guys, I don't want to be, you know, the bearer of bad news, but I'm afraid I've got some bad news. I just didn't see the Riot Squad being pushed because I just, you know, have a feel for what Vince McMahon likes and what he's going to push.
I thought, and because of Liv in the group, maybe, but
yeah, but maybe, but like still, I was just like, I don't know. Just, you could tell from like kind of how they were positioned early that it was just a mid-card women's act. And yeah, she's another one. Got to be feeling good about what she's done. I'm sure that was a shoot when she said getting fired was the best thing that happened to me.
Yeah. Yeah. So as we mentioned, Baker won. It was shenanigans. There was a lot of interference from the outside. Rebel came up, had a distraction. Hater was on the apron distracting. And when that happened, wasn't it Hater? She dropped Soho over the top rope. Yeah, and then Baker dropped her, applied the lockjaw, got the win. So
can I make a hard pitch? Yeah. Can I make a hard right turn or no?
Go ahead.
Okay. I was just seeing, because you were talking about Rampage, I was like, yeah, let's see if anyone's talking about what's going on during the show. I guess we won't do spoilers, but I saw this absolutely atrocious quote from Becky Lynch.
Oh no, Becky?
Yeah, I don't care. Tonight? I don't care if everyone loves her. I'll rip her.
Oh.
I'll rip her because that's how objective I am. I'll rip anybody. I'll rip the biggest names in this industry. I don't give a damn. I'll walk.
You better be careful. This is my daughter's favorite wrestler.
I'll walk right to Titan Towers. I'll rip Vince McMahon. You know me. I have a decent job. I'll live. Becky Lynch. Fans remembers the story, not flips and Canadian destroyers. This is a headline on Fightful Wrestling.
What? But WWE doesn't do stories anymore.
Exactly. Thank you.
What's the problem?
This is a worm brain. This is Jesus. Vince saying, yes, make that story, you know, with the, you know, like the gun to the back of her head. Yes. Say, rip on Canadian destroyers and put over how stories are important. Yes, they are. We agree. That's like the one thing WWE's right about. But you know what the problem is? WWE's stories are cow manure.
They don't do it. They just constantly change.
What's the great story going into Extreme Rules?
The return of the demon, only to lose.
That story's no good either. You mean the same guy who tapped out in a brawl as the babyface and then lost clean in a singles match when his finisher was basically no-sold? Oh, but how hokey was that promo when they started flashing that demon on his face? That stunk. No. And if you like that kind of stuff, I'm going to be very honest with you. You and I view professional wrestling through a very different lens.
Hey, man, I've said it before. I'll say it again. This podcast, early years of this podcast, 5 years ago, we were very positive on WWE. This is an objective show. There were so many times that we came on and Kyle would say, the World Wrestling Federation has done it again. And we were so positive on some of the stuff they were doing. We're objective, though. It's freaking terrible right now. I'm sorry.
I just hate this quote so much. It's still on my phone. I just looked down on it, and I actually got more mad looking down and just rereading the words. Like, because it's just something like, right? Like, Justin, you know this. Like, they just, like, shove their stars out to rip on Canadian destroyers. Because that's basically, like, just this vague way of ripping on the indies. But the irony of WWE, it's not just that their stories suck. It's they're the promotion that then overcompensates with moves and try to go above and beyond in the ring once you get to the pay-per-views. because their stories stick. And, you know, and I don't get into those matches. You're right. It's not about Canadian Destroyers because they're the ones who will like try to do the big moves. But I'm like, yeah, I don't give a fuck about this match.
It reeks of not being a part of the actual hot wrestling product.
Yeah.
Can I click on this and let me see if I can do anything here? Okay. Lynch is the connection with the crowd is the most important thing. It's more than just moves. I agree. It's more important to be able to connect with the audience. I agree with what you're saying.
But the connection with the crowd, there is no comparison between WWE and AEW right now. Like, we were just at the AEW pay-per-view. And the way that crowd reacts and the feel in that arena, I've been to WWE shows recently too, pre-pandemic, a lot of them. It is a whole different feeling. I mean, this AEW thing right now is just on a whole different level with connection to the crowd and the audience. It's not even comparable. And by the way, this is a hard right turn too. Let me just throw this out there because I saw this the other day. I don't care. We're almost done. So I'm going to throw it out there because I thought about it. Is there anything worse than these people on social media who go into the replies of a wrestler? Did you see the story about Dave Meltzer had wrote about people leaving the arena during that Charlotte Alexa Bliss segment? And then I think someone else said, oh, that isn't true. And then Alexa Bliss called him out and she called Dave out and said he was lying or something, whatever. Mm-hmm. We've been very complimentary to Alexa on the show since the start of her run in 2016.
Not so much lately.
This is
par for the course.
Well, I mean, I've still said she plays the character well. It's just the character sucks. But I'm not calling her out. I'm calling out the people in her replies because you see this all the time to WWE people. Is there anything worse than these people that when they call out like a wrestling report or something, they're in the replies like, get them, queen, and all this stuff. Like, they're just trying their hardest for Alexa Bliss to like the tweet. Come on. It is so pathetic.
That is sad.
They're all like just coming after Dave then when she tweets it. I'm like, geez, this is terrible. But
I kind of wish 1,500 people would have left. Why didn't they? You know, to bring the focus back to the athletes here, Daniel Ortiz actually took the words kind of right out of my mouth. Where he put in our comments here, WWE has a handful of overacts, 75 to 80% of AEW's roster is over. I completely agree. Remember, we were talking about this. I don't know if it was just on air or in the car after All Out. It just feels like everybody's over in AEW. And is it the appropriate spot on the card, right? To go back to that, where WWE, all everyone does is because the top of the card's not strong, everyone's like, this guy should be pushed more. Or this guy fucking sucks. Why is he even on TV? You don't really get that in AEW. Your Canadian Destroyer smack at home. Okay, and I'm going to tell you something right now who could come over and have dinner at my house anytime. Is this Tim Jensen? Because
this guy
just absolutely rips the WWE. I love when sometimes I'll post to the Facebook group like, oh man, I was kind of harsh towards WWE in that. And then he like goes even harder.
Tim always
we need
jumps
more people like
in
Tim
the chat right
Jensen
now.
Or Tim J, as it says in the chat room.
Yeah, Tim's a great man. but I mean, this is how it was in the Attitude Era, right? With like every guy on the card was doing something that you cared about. And we've talked about on the show, is the Attitude Era overrated? You go back, you know, you watch those shows top to bottom, not always great, but the crowd responded to everybody and there was always a story going on with everyone on that card that you were invested in the character. And they haven't had that in so long, but AEW does have that right now. And that's why it's so fun to follow.
Even if someone's not at the top of the card in AEW, you can still emotionally invest in them,
mm-hmm.
and not, you know, have that emotional investment stomped on or like thrown back in your face when it doesn't work out.
Like, WWE, you're such an idiot. We're going to make him lose.
Yeah. Like, yes. I mean, imagine like actually thinking Finn Balor's going to win this Sunday or
Dude,
Cesaro.
It is like they book like
great.
They hate their audience. It's like they book like they hate their audience all the time.
And I've never seen a promotion that does a better job of making such a high percentage of its roster feel insignificant, like the modern WWE.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my God, if they want to make someone seem not significant, they are so good at that. They're like, look at this loser who just lost. And you're a loser for rooting for him.
Well, with that said, we will be reviewing Extreme Rules. This Sunday night should be a fun show. I mean, hey, man, it's going to be a fun watch. Tune into our YouTube channel. Join us live, youtube.com/Top Rope Nation. We will be reviewing the show Sunday night live after the fact. As I said earlier, I will be live on the Green Room app Friday night reviewing this week's Rampage. That will drop as a podcast exclusively on Patreon. Link is in the podcast description. Be honored to have your support on Patreon. You get all this bonus content. Yes, all this bonus content from us, like the one night only show that we just did with Liam O'Rourke, which is dropping here in the next couple of days. Hell, it might drop 24 hours from now. I'm getting pretty close on mixing that. And I think I said this on the pod last week. I'm going to repeat myself. We had the goal, 25 patrons got us the unreleased Kyle solo pod. The next goal is 40 patrons. When we get to 40 patrons, I'm releasing for the first time ever an interview I did with Bobby the Brain Heenan in 2002. It was the first interview I ever did as a member of the wrestling media. Not often that you get an unreleased, unheard interview with a legend like Bobby the Brain Heenan. I have it. It's on a cassette tape. I'm going to digitize it. I'll put it out on Patreon the minute we get 40 patrons. Join up, get all that bonus content, over pretty close to 50 bonus shows available right now the minute you sign up, and get us closer to that goal so I can release this thing, because it was a great interview. Bobby Heenan was awesome in that interview. I talked to him for like a half hour. A lot of good stuff. You're going to want to hear it. So
check that out. And when we get to 50, Justin's going to do the shit naked.
Yes. Yes.
Anything for the patrons.
He did not call me a ham and egger, but he did flush the toilet at one point in the interview when I asked him for his opinion on a certain person. I did like a rapid fire thing with him at the end of the interview. It's pretty funny. So,
which is where I stole that gimmick from when Ryan told me that story about the interview.
Yes, indeed. So that's going to drop on Patreon when we get to 40 patrons. So that's the next goal. Thank you to everybody who is supporting us there. Thank you to everyone who is tuning into this live broadcast. Everyone who subscribes on the podcast feeds means a lot. You can follow the show. We're on Instagram. We're on Twitter at Top Rope Nation. You can find me at Ryan Droste. That's Droste. Justin is at Justin Joint, Joynt. Kyle is at TRP Kyle. Anything else you guys wanted to say before we wrap?
New York belongs to AEW.
Braun Breaker. Wanted to say that.
I love it. I love it. All right, guys. Thanks for checking in with our AEW Dynamite Grand Slam post show. We'll be talking to you again real soon.